الرحيم نحمده ونصلي ونسلم على رسوله الكريم وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد عدد ما في علم الله صلاة دائمة بدوام ملك الله اللهم آتي أنفسنا تقواها وزكها أنت خير من زكاها أنت وليها ومولاها اللهم اجعلنا دعاة إليك وإلى رسولك اللهم انفعنا بما علمتنا وعلمنا ما ينفعنا وزدنا علما الحمد لله رب العالمين والعاقبة للمتقين والصلاة والسلام على رسوله الكريم وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين أما بعد This is the second majlis, the second sitting concerning correcting the radha'il. Correcting the radha'il, that is the vile, base, low, worthless qualities. Limits of correction. There are in the inner self of man contemptible and vile characteristics. They are called the radha'il within the inner self, the vile and contemptible characteristics. Maulana Thanwi alayhi rahma has said about these characteristics, these radha'il. He said the salik should get the radha'il corrected by his shaykh one by one. When he is able to resist one of these base qualities and it has been controlled, then he may seek cure of the next. He must not again wait for a total extermination of the vile quality, because that is not possible. In fact, there is much wisdom in its existence within. فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَاهَا أَنْفَاسِ إِيسَى So who is a salik? Salaka. A salik is one who walks in the istilah, the terminology of tasawwuf. A salik is one who goes to a shaykh to seek his islah and reformation. It is as though he walks to him. He's a salik. Tasawwuf is tariq, a way or a path. And salik is one who walks along this path of tasawwuf and tariqa. The shaykh is like a guide who leads him along the path and instructs him on what course he should pursue and how he should conduct himself. The Mawlana has said, Mawlana Thanwi Ali Rahma, that the salik must get the shaykh to correct his radha'il, contemptible, worthless qualities, one by one. For instance, if he has a short temper often, then anger is one of the radha'il. He has to get it corrected. Suppose he is given to beat and scold when angry and he loses control over himself, then he must tell his shaykh that he is short-tempered and gets angry often, because of which he commits other wrongs. His shaykh will then treat him. However, his treatment will not cure him of anger. In fact, even after the treatment is over, he will not lose his temper. Even after the treatment is over, he will lose his temper. Doesn't mean he's not going to lose temper at all. He will lose his temper, because anger, ghadab, is an instinctive characteristic in every human being. But the treatment will restrict it within the limitations applied by the Sharia. Similarly, the radha'il in man can be anger, sexual urge, or niggardliness, miserliness. They are all instinctive. Allah has given man these traits that he may use them correctly. فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَاهَا. If man were not to get angry, then how would he protect himself, his wife, and children, and his property? If he does not get angry and other people attack him or his wife and children, then he would not be driven by any sentiment to protect himself and his family. He will not have the urge to avert loss to himself. The case of a prince. My respected father, Maulana Mufti Muhammad Shafi, Rahmatul Alayh, used to relate the story of a nawab, of a prince. This man was used to do everything according to a set procedure or timetable. He had an appointment with himself for everything he did, and he had a schedule for doing everything at the appointed hours of commencement and completion. During that time, he did nothing else but what was appointed for that, even if he had finished the appointed task earlier. For instance, if he had set aside 6 hours to sleep and was scheduled to wake up at 6 a.m. from sleep, and he happened to wake up at 5 a.m., he would remain in bed until 6 a.m. That is, although he was not sleeping in reality, he was sleeping in his schedule and lying on bed. One day he awoke at 5 a.m., but his time to get up was not until 6 o'clock. So he remained in bed. Meanwhile, a bandar, an ape, a monkey, intruded into his house and took away his clothes. It came in again and took away his bread, and in this way took away some other things. But the nawab watched the ape lying down on his bed. As it turned 6 in the morning, he got up and raised a fuss about the ape, the monkey. Is there no one to watch? Nobody is watching. He said, is everyone dead? This ape is carrying away everything. The other people ask him, Master, did you see the ape do that? He answered, yes, I saw it carry things away. Then, Master, you ought to have prevented it yourself. He protested, oh, but according to my schedule, I was supposed to have been sleeping at that time. Maulana says, Mufti Taqi Usmani says, how surprising that man can bind himself. How surprising man can bind himself to procedure to such an extent that he even suppresses his instinctive feelings of protecting his life and property. Displaying anger at the right moment. Allah has created anger and sense of honor that a man may defend himself when anyone commits excess against him or those related to him or his property, and his anger and sense of honor are aroused. But this anger may be used at a wrong moment too. When the Sharia has not allowed it to be used, in such cases, it is exceeding the limits and it is not proper. There are some proper uses of anger and some wrong uses. In the former cases, it is not wrong at all to show anger. Rather, it is wajib, necessary, to display it. Examples are a father's anger over his son for his misbehavior, a teacher's or a sheikh's anger over his student or disciple to cure them of their shortcomings. In fact, it is a malady and sickness in his superior if he does not show anger to his inferior at such times. It's a sickness. An example of the wrong use of anger is for a man to lose temper on a visitor who has just come to meet him. That innocent man is his guest. He's a visitor. who should be treated well and kindly and entertained, but on the contrary, his host began to give him a piece of his mind. This is blameworthy and wrong. This habit must be corrected. A sheikh has to see, therefore, that anger is used only within its rightful limits by his disciple. He should not allow him to misuse it. Thus, if a man does not know whether he is using his temper rightfully or not, then he must consult his sheikh, who shall find out his condition and advise him on the right course. If, on the other hand, a man realizes that he loses his temper wrongly, then he must relate the whole story to his sheikh, telling him how he misuses it. The sheikh will then guide him in a way that he can gradually control his temper. He must observe the directions of the sheikh. Cure of jealousy, hasad. We may also consider a man who is jealous of other people. Such a person must disclose to his sheikh his problem. He may be feeling jealous of his friend who gets more marks than him in his examination and tests. He's jealous of that. He should ask his sheikh whether this condition is jealousy, and if that is so, how he may cure himself of this evil. Cure of lust. If a man is lustful beyond limits, then he must inform his sheikh of his predicament and seek his advice. Or he may be arrogant, and other people may have pointed out to him this defect, or he may have observed it himself, but it is such a malady that man generally does not himself realize that he suffers from it. We know from experience that an arrogant person will never concede that he is arrogant, and will deny even if he is told by others of that. Nevertheless, other people do recognize the problem in him. He must therefore let his sheikh know that he has been told by others that he is arrogant, or he himself detects this trait in him. He must seek his advice on treatment. Therefore, one must not go to a sheikh to seek azkar, zikr, or advice on what he should recite, or how to observe zikr, or how many times he should do tasbih, for these things are an aid in achieving the aim, not an end. The purpose of this exercise is to take an account of one's living from morning to even, muhasabatun nafs, morning to evening. He should examine himself to see if he had been arrogant somewhere, short-tempered with anyone, unjustly or greedy in doing a deed. He should see if he had the love of worldly possessions in him. He should always continue to examine himself and report his findings to the sheikh and observe the treatment prescribed by him. If he finds it difficult to carry on the treatment, then too he must report to the sheikh. In short, he must tell his sheikh everything about himself. Bas, informing and obeying, informing and obeying. Maulana Tanwi alayhi rahmah has said the same thing in these words. When anyone approaches his sheikh, he must do two things with his sheikh: inform and obey. Inform and obey. He must inform the sheikh about his condition and obey the directions of his sheikh in this regard. In this way, he will be treated of his problem. However, unfortunately, these days, we have turned tasawwuf and tariqah into a riwaj, a custom. We are satisfied, astaghfirullah, nastaghfirullah. We are satisfied at having offered bay'ah, taken the bay'ah to a sheikh. The most we do is observe the practices and the tasbihat which the sheikh has prescribed for us at appointed times. No more. Bas, no more. Indeed, my respectable father used to say that if the rava'il, the contemptible qualities are not cured, the azkar, the zikr, may sometimes prove harmful. This can be explained by the example of a sick person who should not be given stimulants or strengthening medicines because he's sick. If a man has severe cold, the doctors prescribe medicine to cure him of cold, but they will not give him tonics, for they believe that tonics absorb into the body mixture. So when he complains of phlegm, the tonic absorbs into it. According to Eastern doctors, the problem mixture should be cured first, and only after he is cured, he may be given tonics. In the same way, if a man is proud, arrogant, and observes zikr in this condition, and sometimes because of his arrogance, his malady, his sickness magnifies. He will feel proud of observing zikr now and bracket himself with great Sufis and Mashayikh and the Awliya. Hence, instead of benefiting from zikr, his sickness intensifies, which shows that he must first free himself of the radhail. Now, this radhail is natural. فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَاهَا وَبَيَّنَا أَنَّ أَحَلَهُمَا قَيْرٌ وَالْآخَرَ قَبِيهٌ كَمَا قَالَ الْمُفَسِّرُ الجلال الدين المحلي الشافعي. Maulana Thanwi alayhi rahma goes on to say, it is clear, says Maulana Thanwi alayhi rahma, wa nawwara Allahu maraqidahum wa nafa'ana bi ulumihim, Allahumma ameen. It is clear that radhail is natural, because even children lose their temper and become angry. So it's natural. Scholars, ulama, tell us that most times anger results from pride. Sometimes you even correct a person, sister, you know, so-and-so, brother so-and-so, he gets angry because, wow, shouldn't be corrected. Anger results from pride. Then anger breeds things like backbiting. Thus, if children can become angry, then it means that they are arrogant and they have that bit of pride and arrogance in them also. The presence of these things in children shows that they come naturally to human beings. So this is evidence that the radhail is natural. So the message that is being conveyed is that the radhail, the contemptible qualities, are inborn, and there is no point in trying to get rid of them. That can never be done. We cannot rid ourselves of anger or arrogance, but we can make them feeble and unharmful. We can crush them so that their poison is removed and no longer dangerous. The Maulana goes on to explain it. Removing radhail simply means weaken them. By removing of radhail, we mean to say that they should be made feeble so that when they are checked, they are not as difficult to counter as they had been before. This means that radhail cannot be eradicated completely. They are weakened and made harmless. They become so feeble that one does not have to work oneself very hard to check them, as was the case earlier. It is with everything we do, whether worldly or religious. If anything seems difficult and we devote ourselves to it, it becomes easy. For example, a man who was not used to offer 5 times salah found it very difficult to go to the masjid and to pray. Difficult. Gradually, as he began to accustom himself to it, he found it less difficult. The difficulty does not vanish, you know, altogether, and he has to counter it. But he finds it easier to overcome the difficulty. Wow, wisdom of the elders. Therefore, the reward that we are promised against offering prayers or salat is actually against the effort and the difficulty we encounter and the hard work we put in. If we had to face no difficulty, then how would we earn the reward? The same thing applies to the Akhlaq-i-Radhila, the contemptible manners. Let us take the example of anger. Before he treated himself, a man had such fits of anger and he was so short-tempered that he could not tolerate anything against his wishes. He would not hesitate to scold other people on flimsy grounds. But after he pursued the path of tasawwuf, he realized that anger is a bad thing and it is a sin to resort to it unjustly. So he checked himself, and although he was provoked and he felt like giving someone a real piece of his mind, he kept himself under control. Of course, it took him a long time and effort to control his temper, but he did succeed to the extent that though he becomes angry, yet he controls himself and does not display his anger, crushing the lust. Let us next consider lust or sensual urge. This is also one of the radhail. If a man uses his sexual urge wrongly, then it is a very dangerous thing and destructive. A man may have been used to satisfy his lust by ogling at women and looking at women and looking at what he should not. But as he turned to tasawwuf and suluk, he realized that he was committing a grave sin from which he must keep himself away. So when he had an opportunity again to look where he should not, he was tempted to satiate himself, but he remembered that he was correcting and reforming himself. This reminder caused him to turn his glance away, though it put him through a terrible effort. Oh, in turning that glance away, yes, it put him through a terrible effort and considerable self-control. After all, he succeeded because he had made a firm resolve not to do that again. My desires and longings notwithstanding, I have resolved to prepare my heart to receive you, O Allah. He removed his glance. You know what? He found it less difficult than the first time. It was easier this time. The third time, the difficulty was lesser, and it would go on coming down until he would gain such a control that though the desire to look would be there, wow, though the desire to look would be there, he would not find it difficult to look away. This is the point. The repeated turning away of his glance weakened the urge. Mawlana Tanwi Rahmatullah Alayhi said that to remove radhail means to make them weak, so that one does not have to exert oneself as much as he had to do in the earlier stages. Some effort has to be made nevertheless. No matter how much effort a man may put in, he cannot remove altogether the characteristics of lust and anger. No way. The inclination to commit sin will still be there. And he will be tempted. The difference will be that while it took him a lot of time and effort to fight them off earlier, he now finds it easier to get over these feelings, and he does it sooner. Mawlana Tanwi Ali Rahmat said further, otherwise, the greed of the greedy, the miserliness of the miser, the pride of the arrogant do not vanish. Of course, they become weak and feeble. The essence of greed in one's nature is not removed. The essence of niggardliness in a man's nature does not vanish. The essence of arrogance will not disappear from one's nature. They will nevertheless become weak. In other words, these things will remain in their essence in a person's nature, but his efforts have made them so feeble that they cannot cause him to do the wrong thing, and he does not succumb to temptation. crushing greed. We know that it is human nature to crave for wealth. Who doesn't like wealth? Indeed, Allah has said in the Holy Quran, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم زين للناس حب الشهوات من النساء والبنين زين للناس حب الشهوات من النساء والبنين Alluring, decorative, attractive. An attraction is made to men from the love of pleasures. The love of pleasures. These pleasures, these hubbu shahawat, which has become mozayyan and decorated to man, hubbu shahawat, minan nisa, wal baneen, love of pleasures, that come from women and sons. So it's human nature to have grief and to crave for wealth. If the craving is used at the right place, then it is not so bad a thing. A man must have that much craving for wealth as is necessary to support himself and his wife and children and to give their rights. But excessive greed is mamnu, prohibited. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam has said about it, if man were to get a valley of gold, he will covet for a second valley of gold. If he gets the second, he will yearn for a third, and nothing but dust can fill the belly of the son of Adam. Greed in this manner is haram. For if he becomes greedy, man does not distinguish between halal and haram means of earning. There are certain grades of greed. The first is the kind of greed which prompts man to earn in an unlawful manner, like stealing, robbing, banditry, cheating. That all comes because of greed. Cheating, banditry, robbing, stealing. May Allah preserve us. Ameen. This is the most extreme kind of greed where a man resorts to that. Stealing, robbing, banditry, cheating because of that type of greed he has. The second kind of greed is one which does not directly involve him in unlawful, haram earning, but you know what? It incites him to find excuses and vague arguments to collect wealth. It incites him to find excuses. This kind, unfortunately, is found mostly among the Maulvis, the ulama, the Maulanas. My respected father, Rahmatullah Alayh, used to say that the devil, the shaitan associated with a Maulvi, with a Maulana, that shaitan with him is also a Maulvi. Wow. A Maulvi will never be prepared to steal, you know, or plunder, or usurp someone's right. No, he's not going down that road. He will tell himself that these things are evil, but his shaitan that is with him, which is also a Maulvi, but his devil is made for him. His devil is made for him. And he will convince him with arguments and excuses. He will say, you know what, you have a right to it. Take it. Though he has no right over it, finding fake excuses. He convinces himself to appropriate unlawful wealth. This grade of greed is also unlawful. The third kind of greed is found in one to whom wealth seems good and he wishes to accumulate it, but he does not do anything unlawful to earn that. The third kind of greed is found in one to whom wealth seems good. It's okay, no problem, it seems good. And he wishes to accumulate it, but he does not do anything haram to earn that. He does not adopt improper measures to get wealth and does not try to find excuses or fake arguments for that. No. He keeps what Allah has given him through fear means and is happy with that. Hoping to receive more, he gets it and he hopes to receive more. That's cool. This kind is not blameworthy. because it does not harm him in any way and it does not make him do anything wrong. Miserliness, the same thing applies to niggardliness. The Quran says about it, وَأُحْضِرَتِ الْأَنفُسُ الشُّحَّ. And human souls are ever prone to avarice. And shuh is shiddatul bukl, severity of greed. وَأُحْضِرَتِ الْأَنفُسُ الشُّحَّ. And human souls are ever prone to greed and avarice. Man does have some liking for wealth and possession. Miserliness is not blameworthy as long as it does not prevent discharge of a duty and does not prompt one to do an unlawful or disapproved thing. If a man does not pay zakat because of his niggardliness, or one does not spend on his wife and children for what is their due, or does not give charity, or lives like mendicants, though Allah has given him wealth, then he is doing a wrong thing. It is a right of Allah that man should disclose Allah's blessing on him, and people should know that he is not poor but wealthy. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Inna Allah," said the Prophet alayhi salam, "verily Allah, yuhibbu ayyara," Allah loves to see, "athara ni'matihi alayhi," Allah loves to see the effect of his blessings and favor upon a person. Allah wants to see the effects of that, said the Prophet. "Inna Allah yuhibbu ayyara," indeed Allah loves to see, "athara ni'matihi," the athar and the effect of his favors, alayhi, upon a servant. And also the Quranic verse, "Wa amma bi ni'matika rabbika fahaddith, wa amma bi ni'mati rabbika fahaddith tahdithun ni'ma." Hence, we must demonstrate the blessings of Allah on us. Let not one who is affluent move about in tattered garments as though he's a vagrant. And he has wealth, you know, but moving like a vagrant, because that is a kind of ingratitude to Allah. Oh, Allah has given you wealth, but you're driving the car that's shutting down every morning and looking so ragadang, ragadang. Let not one who is affluent move about in tattered garments, because that is a kind of ingratitude to Allah. The bounties of Allah must be used in such a way that people should know that he has been blessed with them by Allah. He proclaims the favors of Allah. But then there's a small line again which divides tahdithun ni'mah with boasting, as was mentioned in the first sitting. A kind of miserliness is found in a man who gives his rights. You know what? He gives his rights, you know, but keeps them to a minimum. For instance, he spends on his household the bare minimum so that a very simple meal is served while they can afford to have a better diet. This is a kind of miserliness, which we may say it is impolite, not nice, impolite. However, if no one's right is usurped and the family is also happy, but he feels a slight unwillingness at the time of spending, then there is no harm in that. In spite of that, this is a kind of miserliness which is not put into practice. The effort of the man makes it unharmful, say docile. So thus, we have seen that true effort, mujahadat, the radha'il, the contemptible, base, low qualities, like miserliness and greed, they don't vanish, but become harmless. Weaken them. May Allah enable all of us to keep away from radha'il. And this brings us to the end of the second sitting. Allahumma ati anfusana taqwaha wa zakkiha anta khayru man zakkaha anta waliyuha wa maulaha. Subhanallahi wa bihamdihi, subhanakallahu wa bihamdik, nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta nastaghfiruk wa natubu ilaik. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun. Wassalamun alal mursalin walhamdulillahi rabbil alamin.